Hello everyone, welcome to SecTools podcast by InfoSec Campus. This is episode 52. I'm your host of the show, Sanup Thomas. We have an interesting guest today, Duncan Ogilvie. Welcome, Duncan. Welcome to the show.
Thanks. Yeah, thanks for having me.
So Duncan, the reasons why we are having this show is primarily pretty famous tool, X64 debugger. But before we get into that, I would like to know about you. How was your journey to InfoSec? So far, like all my research pointed me to a talk that you've given in probably 2016 in maybe a developer conference, if I'm not wrong.
I think that was at Lanuit du Hack in Paris, probably.
That's the same one. Yeah. I would like to actually hear from you.
Yeah, so I don't know, when I was maybe 14 years old, I think, I was like really interested in, cracks, basically key generators that like was really interesting to me. And back then I was just downloading those things, and I also found some tools that people were releasing, and I found some tutorials. And actually it went from there. I was doing that like during high school and stuff like that. And also that's when I started also X64 debug, because I was using OliDebug. I'm sure you're familiar with it. There was no 64-bit version there back then, and WinDebug was kind of, very different and difficult to use. So I figured that maybe I'll start with that. So yeah, that's actually how I started. X64 debug is my first tool kind of in that area. And then I did university, working on X64 debug during that. And then I started to work for a software protection company. So I worked there for a while, also kept using and working on X64 debug during that. And so now I'm working in mobile security, doing research there, mainly about Android. So yeah, and yeah, that's it, I guess.
Okay.
I've just been very interested in this since I'm very young, essentially.
I mean, it's pretty interesting to me, because you build this debugger when you're, 20 years old or even earlier? You started working on it.
I started working on it when I was 16 years old, I think.
Yeah.
It was my high school graduation project. To work on this, I had to pick something, and I was kind of experimenting at home with, I think, the Titan engine back then, and that was my project. Yeah,
I don't know if that time any open source debuggers were available. I mean, there were definitely debuggers available, but I don't know, like Binary Engine was not in the scene at that time. Radar was not in the scene at that time.
Radar was there, was I think also very early in their development. It was mainly focused on Linux, and
right.
That's true. There was only like a Visual Ducks debugger back then, which was not open source, but it was free. And there was WinDebug. Yeah, I think that's it for 64-bit anyway. There was, of course, OliDebug and Immunity Debugger.
Yeah,
they were around, but yeah.
And pretty obvious that writing a debugger is not really like a fun job. It really needs some gutsy move to do it, like, or you are super desperate to do something that not already there in the field. So kudos to that first, but I want to know more from you. What made you to like, let's go and break all the norms and build a debugger?
Honestly, like when I look back at it now, honestly, I think it was just, young person's arrogance, maybe. Like if I would sit down now and be like, let's make a 64-bit debugger, I would be like, nah, way too much work, right? But, you know, I think how it started was there was this Titan engine was released. This was, I think it was mainly meant for malware unpacking, like a library that was made available by Reversing Labs. They're still around, actually. they made that available. So, and then I thought, you know, based on that, okay, maybe I could build this debugger, because, you know, there was already some base there, like to, you know, the debug API was already kind of used. I could look at the code. So yeah, that was kind of how I thought, okay, I will start. Like initially, how it started was I just wanted to make a command line tool that you could use that API from Titan Engine. So you could say start process, set breakpoint, run, and then it basically went from there. So it started out as a command line tool, and then eventually there was a GUI added on top of it, and just kind of slowly grew organically, I guess.
Interesting. And I think with I don't know if I may sound super lame or dumb. With Linux, I feel there are still documentations available. I don't know how deep the documentations are in terms of Windows debugging, or what was the challenges that you had when you specifically build a debugger for Windows platform, or you had any at all?
Well, of course, there were many challenges. I mean, I did look around before we started to see if I could remember some of those things. But honestly, it's like it's been 10 years now at this point. And, the stuff, especially from the beginning, I forgot everything and I didn't write any of it down. So that's a bit unfortunate. But no, I would say that actually, I mean, I know this is maybe a bit controversial of an opinion, but I would say that Microsoft's documentation, the MSDN page, it's one of the best in the world. I would say it's like a really good documentation once you know how to read it. It's challenging at first, but no, I think that it's very clear for the most part. So yeah, I mean, there's just a few APIs related to debugging, and honestly, like if you just wanted to make like a very simple debugger that just prints like all the loaded DLLs and stuff, you could do that in less than a day, I would say. So yeah, it's like I don't know, obviously it was hard to make the whole UI and like a lot of stuff around that. That's really challenging, but the core APIs used for debugging are not that difficult on Windows. In contrast to Linux, I don't know that much about it, but I know that this ptrace API is one of the worst APIs ever made. So
And speaking about like building the UI and all, you choose C++ and Qt for building the whole setup, and made pretty much the whole architecture as simple as it possibly can. But if I ask you the same questions, like if you want to choose programming language or like a tech stack for today's, if you want to build, or if you still have the energy to build a debugger today, what would be your program choices?
Well, just to clarify, like it was not my idea to do the UI in Qt. So the very early on, there was someone named Sigma who he disappeared completely. But basically, he knew a bit of Qt and he kind of started this whole UI thing. So yeah, I just wanted to clarify that.
I see.
That was not my decision. My decision was to basically use this Windows Win32 APIs. But yeah, it was I think I'm glad that we picked Qt in the end because it's nice to work with. But to answer your question, well, I don't know if it's obvious, but I would say that right now, if you want to build any kind of UI, you should pick web technologies. I think that's like might be a bit controversial because of the whole Electron. I know it uses a lot of RAM, but yeah, I mean, if you want to build any UI, like HTML and CSS are the way. I mean, if I would do it now, I would pick Svelte. That's something I've been using recently as a framework, and it's really, yeah, it's just so much nicer than doing it in Qt.
Yeah, makes sense. But I mean, I've also seen like a lot of people started contributing back to the, or rather creating plugins or extensions or what do you call it? You know, I've one thing that actually caught my attention was someone actually posted on GitHub page about like a Binary Ninja integration with X64 debugger. How was your experience in terms of community contributions coming back to X64 debugger and or also the adoption of it? Like, I mean, if someone used to like one debugger, I mean, it takes them a wise choice to switch to another one, right? I mean, you know
Yeah, sure.
it.
I mean, yeah, at the beginning this was really hard. So, we released that on some forums. And well, obviously the tool was made with OliDebug in mind. I mean, I think you can see that it's like it looks the same as OliDebug. I mean, it has some modernizations, like it has tabs in the UI instead of those MDI Windows, but the whole idea was to kind of match OLEDebug's feature set, but for 64-bit because it didn't exist at the time. At the beginning, adoption was like really slow. People were asking, "Yo, can you add this feature? Can you add that feature from OLEDebug?" Right? So like kind of, I don't know. I remember I was kind of scrambling basically to try to satisfy my customers, if you will. I mean, they weren't paying, obviously, but at the beginning that was hard. But at some point, I don't know when, I guess, like the SANS Institute switched their course to use x64 debug. I think that was around 2017, and probably after that, there was like, yeah, the ball started rolling, and now people seem to enjoy it. But yeah, when it comes to plugins, well, that was a nice thing about OLEDebug. I remember that there was a lot of plugins because OLEDebug wasn't open source, so you couldn't extend like the code, right? You couldn't really fix the code. So there was a lot of plugins there, and that was something that, yeah, I wanted to also make possible, basically. So yeah, like from the beginning, I tried to design all the features in x64 debug, or at least a lot of them, to be kind of that you can modify them with the plugin, or you can get some callbacks when there are certain events happening, so the plugins can do extra things. But I don't know, there are quite a few plugins actually. I didn't count them, but well, they're separate from x64 debug, right? The only connection is that, yeah, if you make a plugin, you can put it up on the wiki, and so other people can find it. But otherwise, I don't know what people are doing internally in their company. Maybe they have plugins. I have no clue, honestly.
Did someone made like an awesome x64 debugger plugin GitHub page? The
Ah,
awesome
really?
list. I
Okay.
don't know. I would
It
love to
could
see
be, could be.
that.
Yeah, so there is one. It's on plugins.x64debug.com,
I
and there
see.
you can see, like, well, it's not all of them, but it's the ones that people submitted to the wiki, and you can
Oh.
submit your own plugin there too.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, that's a good marketplace to like surf through.
Yeah. Yeah,
Cool.
this is definitely something that's still like an open issue. So there is a plugin manager from that someone made, that basically allows you to just see the list and then click install to install it. Like
Nice.
Binary Ninja has that, for example. I think IDA has it now too. I'm not sure. But yeah, that's something that's not integrated into x64 debug itself yet. But that's something, yeah, that I'm looking at. But there's too much stuff to do and too little time, unfortunately. So yeah.
And speaking of the contributions, right? I mean, the for every development user feedback, or rather the crash reports or like bug reports are crucial in terms of like the improvements of it, right? I mean, you probably won't be able to cover all the test cases. You might find the users are facing some different problems, but how was your experience with the bug reports? Because it's a debugger, the issues can be challenging to replicate.
For sure, yeah, for sure. Yeah, that's the hardest problem, is when someone says, "Yeah, my database file was corrupted, right? And I lost my breakpoints or my labels or whatever." And it's like, I'm asking, "Yeah, how did that happen?" Yeah, I just opened it, and then I restarted five times, and then I opened another program, and then I reopened the previous one, and then the database is lost. So you try to reproduce it. Obviously, you can never reproduce it yourself, right? That's the thing. So yeah, that's definitely a challenge, but sometimes you can guess. I mean, that's also a thing, that when errors happen, it's important to kind of log them, right? So that you can ask, can you send your log file? And then someone will, maybe you can then figure out what happened. For example, if the disk was full, something like this might happen, right? It just fails to write the file. But yeah, if the disk is full, that those kind of things can happen. That's
I see.
and yeah, overall, there's a lot of challenging issues that we've solved over the years. I guess there was quite a difficult one that was very interesting, that basically what would happen was that you would open the program and everything, you would debug a program and everything would work. But then as soon as it paused, all the mouse and the keyboard, all the inputs would freeze. They would not be delivered, right? So like this took ages of research, and by not just me, but also many other people. In the end, we figured out there was some obscure Windows API that allows you to hijack the input from another thread. Well, the thing was that the program stole the input from x64 debug, which everything was fine as soon as it was not paused. But as soon as you pause it, then the input loop stops and everything froze. So you get this kind of issues.
Well, that's funny too. I
So
mean, it's definitely like a great learning, but it's also like annoying at sometime.
yeah, it can be tough for sure. You know, there's like a double freeze or handle leaks or other kinds of issues. I mean, now I would say it's fairly stable. So, I mean, I do not experience many crashes anymore because at the beginning that used to be a problem. You know, I was also very inexperienced at software development, especially C++. It was my first real project essentially. So yeah, of course, there were many just null pointer dereferences or just corruption of data, and those can be difficult to solve. But nowadays it's like, if I will see one of those issues that someone just reports that, oh, it will crash, that will be fixed pretty quickly. But it's quite rare, I think. Hopefully. For me, at least, it's rare, but you never know about other people.
Okay. I mean, maybe you, I mean, this is another thing, right? Like, you know, the author himself will use the tools in a certain way, and the users will be using maybe in different ways. So we never know.
Yeah, that's true. I also have no idea who my users are for the most part. Like, there's no telemetry or anything like that. You know, in modern apps, everybody knows kind of what people are clicking, and I have no clue. I mean, I know it's used by malware analysts, for example, but how they use it, like, sometimes you add a feature and just nobody uses it, at least as far as you're aware. So, that happens. Yeah, that's difficult because I only see the things that people report. If they are like, oh, it crashes or something's wrong, then I see it, but I don't see when someone says, oh, I use this feature all the time and I love it, or like this you don't see, right? It's difficult. So that can also be interesting, to watch someone explain how to use this debugger on YouTube, for example. That can be really fun for me because I don't know how other people use it. So maybe they have like some nice tricks that they developed that I didn't know about, or I can show them some tricks sometimes. That's
Yeah.
nice.
Or I mean, for about like more than 10 years of development, and pretty much 10 years of active development, do you have any inside stories or like anything that you feel like as challenging period or interesting development phase to share?
Yeah, like I said earlier, it's hard to come up with concrete examples, I guess.
I see.
But well, definitely what's hard is to keep the motivation, right? At times it can be challenging to work on such a project. And sometimes, honestly, like for the past, I don't know, few weeks, I didn't do anything with the project. There's maybe some issues opened, but you look at it and you're like, ah, I'm busy, I don't feel like working on it. That's something that's been difficult for sure. But I have to say that I usually find motivation again after a break. I take a break from it, and then maybe I use the tool and I find something that doesn't work quite right, or I just look at the issues and I remember, oh yeah, someone reported this, then maybe I'll fix it. And then usually I kind of improve it. That's nice. And it's also just really nice to when people contribute to your tool. That is a nice experience. Like it can be difficult as well, but it's a really nice experience when someone like finds a bug and they just, I don't know, propose the fix, or they even fix it themselves, and you just go back and forth on it. Like, how would we solve it in a nice way? That's just a nice experience, right? To basically work together, often with just complete strangers. But you get it. I don't know. It's a nice feeling to have this kind of community in that way.
Interesting. I mean, that's good because I do want to ask you that because building actively on 10 years as an open source is not definitely an easy. Building debugger itself is not an easy, but this is another challenge on top of it. So
Yeah.
yeah, thanks for explaining that. I mainly know your project as x64 debugger, right? And then I also surf through your GitHub page, and Dumbulator is another interesting tool, which is currently like what, as a work in progress, but do you use it for your desk problems or your work issues? I don't know. So if you don't mind explaining, like, how do you use it and like what motivated you to build this?
Sure. Yeah, so Dumpulator, it's a tool that essentially you take a snapshot of the process. You can do this with x64 debug. There's like a built-in command to take a mini dump, essentially, which just captures the full memory of the process. And then the idea is of this Dumpulator is that you can, with a simple Python API, you can call functions in that process. But without actually running it, because you already took the snapshot of all the memory, so that means you have all the code, you have everything set up basically. So the idea is that you can then call some functions in that process, which it's of course very it's like quite abstract as a concept. But where it came from is from watching the streams from Sergey from OA Labs, because he was kind of showing on stream how malware analysts are working, like how they are solving their problems. And one of the things that happens a lot is that you need to extract this configuration from the malware, so like the C2 servers or stuff like that. And very often, what I saw, what happens is that someone finds this configuration which is usually encrypted, and then they reverse engineer that function that decrypts it. So some RC4 or AES or some combination. Usually, it's a combination of random algorithms that kind of jam together. And then they reverse it, they transpose all of that into like Python. And then, that takes a lot of time, that whole thing. And then what they do is they take the encrypted buffer from the malware and they put that through their Python function to get the decrypted configuration of that malware. So like a config extractor. And apparently this is a common thing that happens in industry. I wouldn't know because I don't work in this industry, which is kind of interesting. But there I had this idea basically that what if you just snapshot that process and then just call that function to decrypt it, just it would be emulated for you and you do not have to basically spend all of the time reverse engineering that config decryption function. So that's where that Dumpulator idea basically, that's where it started. And now it's kind of evolving into like a sort of sandbox. But it's just something that I experiment with from time to time. I just try to take a snapshot of a process and then just resume execution. And then I will see, what syscalls are not implemented yet. And I try to implement them somehow in Python. So yeah, it was just a learning project for me to basically learn Python and to experiment with the new tool essentially, or a new paradigm of tool, because this isn't really that common from what I understand.
I mean, typically, if someone is familiar with the language and most likely stick to it, and then continue like building tools on top of it again and again, but you tend to like switch from like or try and experiment everything that's possibly can. What drives you there?
Well, I mean, I guess that it's just learning drives me. So yeah, that's always been like important to me is to keep learning. So yeah, I always try to, I don't know, learn new things as much as I can. Because what I noticed that, sometimes you think that, yeah, should I learn front-end development, right? It's like, what's the point for me? I'm doing research, I'm not developing front-end, so why would I learn HTML and CSS? But I decided to learn it anyway. And then it turns out that a while later, you always find a use for it. At least that's my experience. So yeah, I learned Go or whatever just to contribute to one project. And then at some point you always come across some other Go code that you need to know, or you need to change something somewhere, and then that always comes in handy. So for me, learning essentially drives that just to experiment with stuff. So it's always useful.
Yeah, because I mean, most of the times, like people have confusions on like which language should I pick up, and then they'll start like instead of the research point, like, the actual problem solvings, the issue becomes like, should I learn this or that? And they're stuck in that confusions instead of like stepping in then learning probably both or just pick a choice and just solve the problem. For our audience who are listening to this episode, people who want to get into InfoSec in general, or people who want to start maybe doing reverse engineering or any field for that matter, what is your word of advice from all these years of experience?
Yeah, this is like the hardest question, right? Because you already know a lot. So then when someone will ask you, how do I know stuff? How do I learn? It's like, yeah, you know, I don't know. This is a very hard question. But I guess my answer would be to, first of all, pick something that you actually care about. I mean, that helps a lot. So for me, I learn while doing stuff. So, you know, I don't learn from books very well at all. So I wouldn't recommend people to pick up some book or read stuff. Like, if you're interested in the topic, sure, you can of course read about it, but yeah, definitely it helps to have a project, right? Something that you want to make, something you need, I don't know, something that you think would be cool if you copying someone else's project is also a perfectly valid way of learning. Like, if you think, okay, I would like to write an x86 instruction emulator, you know, anyone can do it essentially. If you just say that, okay, that's my goal, then you can start, and I think you can achieve it, honestly. Mm-hmm. I mean, of course, there are really hard problems that maybe you shouldn't pick at first. That's tricky. But even then, like, you know, if you figure out at some point that, you know, I want to make like my own operating system, and you don't know any C program or anything, yeah, maybe that's not the right first choice, right? But I don't know, like, you can always try, and you will get further than you think, I imagine.
Thank you, Duncan. Thank you for sharing all the knowledge and awesome tools, X64 Debugger, and all the best for your future features.
Thanks. Yeah, thanks. Thanks a lot.
Thanks everyone for listening. We'll see you in the next one.